having started in 22nd position, Gabriel Bortoletto takes the win, last to first at Monza for the boy from Brazil.
Vamos Brazil. In 2025, Gabriel Bortoletto will bring Brazil back to the Formula One grid.
It's like a dream since I'm very young, you know, started racing with the dream to reach F1 one day. And now, you know, being able to sign this contract and to be in the grid in 25, it's very grateful and I'm looking forward to it.
The reigning Formula 3 champion and current Formula 2 title contender has joined Sauber on a multi-year deal. He'll be Brazil's first full-time driver since Felipe Massa retired in 2017. So, who is the 20-year-old from Sao Paulo? Why have Sauber put their faith in him? And what does this mean for a country which loves Formula One? Welcome to F1 Nation. I'm Tom Clarkson. The main man, Bortoletto, is going to be joining us very shortly. And with me now is Brazilian former F1 driver Luciano Berti and 1996 world champion Damon Hill. Guys, it's wonderful to have you both with us. Luciano, let's start with you. Can we get your initial reaction to the news that Gabriel is going to be joining Formula One full time next year?
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to be here with you. Damon, nice to meet you. Pleasure to be with you as well. Let's see. I got to know Gabriel last year. He was already in Formula 3. And my first impression, Tom, was not about just a quick racing driver, but of a young and really clever driver that was telling me how he was approaching the Formula 3. It was mid-season last year, and he was already leading the championship. And he was telling me that, you know, before the season started, he was studying the last few seasons, the way that the drivers behaved during the season, to have a plan how to approach his own season. So he was not only thinking about performance, he was thinking about the championship, the points, the consistency. And I was really surprised for it. So I said, man, this guy is quite clever. I wasn't as clever as him at this age. So then I started to be a bit closer, and then he won the championship. This year was a really challenge for him because he didn't start the season so well. Even the starts of the race, he was struggling with it. Then he told me why. But the way that he managed to deal with it, with the pressure and lacking a bit of results, was really impressive as well. So we became a bit closer. We started to talk to each other. I'm giving him some advices that I wish someone gave me when I was in his position, let's say. So when I was about to happen, my feeling was, thinking about Formula One and how it works, that his chance was really, really high to be in Formula One next year, because Sauber Audi has a medium long-term project, and to be honest, next year for them is just one more year. They are not going to be caring too much about results next year, and that was the ideal opportunity to have a young guy on the team. Of course, they were considering to have Valtteri, because of his experience and so on. But it was the ideal situation, especially because the young drivers from this year were doing so well. Yeah, Berman, Colapinto, and so on. So it wasn't a surprise, Tom. I was really happy for him. I was really happy as a Brazilian racing driver to have another Brazilian guy in the grid. So yeah, I'm really hopeful that he'll be able to do a good job mid-long-term in Formula One.
He's definitely incredibly mature, isn't he? But Damon, let's bring you in. You've been teammates with the greatest Brazilian racing driver of them all, Ayrton Senna. What's your reaction to seeing another Brazilian back on the grid?
Well, I've just come back from Brazil, and you're just never able to ignore the presence of Ayrton and what he meant to Brazil. I mean, Brazil has always been on the map. You know, the circuit is called after Carlos Pache. Emo was there. I was in the McLaren motor talking to him. And then you had Nelson Piquet was there as well. So Brazil had so many drivers through. When I was in Formula 3, I had Mauricio Sandra Sala. I was racing against, I think, Guzman was already in F1. You know, you had loads of these. It's been there on the map, and we've had this gap, this long gap of 8 years now with no Brazilian drivers. So It's great to have a Brazilian carrying the flag for a country that is so steeped and loves motorsport. So it's great news.
It just feels right, doesn't it, to have a Brazilian in Formula One? Well, why don't we talk to that Brazilian right now? Because Gabriel Bortoleto is joining us from Brazil. Gabriel, it's wonderful to see you. How does it feel to know that you're going to be heading to Formula One next year?
Hey guys, it feels amazing. It's like a dream since I'm very young. You know, started racing with the dream to reach F1 one day, and now, you know, being able to sign this contract and to be in the grid in 25, it's very grateful, and I'm looking forward to it.
Can you talk us through the negotiations, Gabriel? Because it feels like it's all happened very quickly. Is that the case?
Yes, it did. Obviously, we have been talking for a couple of months, I believe, already. What was going to happen, if it was going to happen in 26 or in 25. But I think the 25 news came very, not so long ago. And it feels very good because I didn't want to stay 1 year without driving and now being able to, you know, continue the momentum of driving F3, F2, and now going to F1 next year. It's I think it's the best way to do it.
Hi, Gabriel. Nice to see
Hey,
you here
Luciano.
with us. Brazil works in a different way in terms of if you have a Brazilian driver, the audience is going to be much higher. Probably in England, people do understand more about motor racing and they will watch that with a British driver doing well or not. They like motor racing. In Brazil, they follow the Brazilians in any sport. So it's going to be more audience. The importance of motor racing is going to be bigger for every single one involved with motor racing. But at the same time, I told Gabriel already, Brazil lacks a little bit of, I would say, even responsibility with the racing drivers because they do expect so much too soon. They raise the expectations too soon. We know that Gabriel is going to be doing his first year in the biggest series in the world, which is quite difficult already. And with a team that is not going to be ready for results yet. Maybe they can surprise us next year, but this is not what we expect. So I hope all the press, the people cheering for Gabriel, that they realize that we cannot make the same mistakes as we've done in the past, to have too much expectations. I give him the chance to develop himself, to be ready when he has a good car on his hands.
Yeah, well, it's a two-edged sword, isn't it? You know, it's the upside is that it's great because if you do well, there's absolutely, you know, pandemonium. Everyone's so excited. And, you know, this passion that there is, how have you been received so far? Have you looked at newspapers or do they do newspapers anymore? Do you look at the social is basically what you'll be trending or something, will you, in Brazil?
I've not been following that much because I'm not so much of a social media guy. Like, I obviously look at it, like I check my Instagram, but I'm more like I send my friends some reels and stuff. I don't keep looking at what people talk about me because I know it's a both way road. You know, people talk well and bad about you. If you perform, they are making you the new Ayrton Senna, and if you perform bad one race, they put you like you're not great and you don't deserve to be there. So I'm a type of guy that obviously I really appreciate my fans and everyone in Brazil that support me, and obviously I get these messages, but I am not so involved on that things just for these reasons. On my side, I don't know if things change in the last years or not, but obviously it's very difficult for us to pay for a season in Formula 3 or Formula 2 because I think it's very difficult to get sponsors nowadays to support us to go to Europe. So, you know, it was not easy to get to F1 in my situation. There was always a support from my family side, and obviously we know between us how much effort they put, how many things they couldn't do, you know, to keep me racing, to how many things we needed to sell or to not do to make me racing Formula 2 in this season. So it was tough, but at the end of the day it paid off. I just signed a contract, but it doesn't mean it's forever. So I need to perform on track to be in Formula One for a long time.
Well, Gabriel, talk us through the decision because you're currently, as we speak today, a McLaren young driver still. You're going to have to sever links with the team to take this opportunity with Sauber. So, why did you choose Sauber? And equally, why do you think they chose you?
So yeah, I'm a McLaren driver until Sunday of Abu Dhabi race. I'm still with them as a part of the academy. They're giving all the support needed, you know, for these 2 rounds. We did an exceptional job this year in Formula 2 so far, and we need to finish in a high. So we are aiming for obviously finishing this championship the best way possible. So all the work I was doing before, I will keep doing. And yeah, the reason why I choose Sauber, I think the project, obviously, that Mattia showed me about Audi in Formula One, the future, what he wants, what Audi wants, and to be obviously the first Audi driver ever. It's such a great thing and an excited project. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. At the same time, you know, when you get a chance to F1, you don't think so much where I'm gonna be, more just jump in and do the best you can. But I was a very lucky guy to have been offered a nice project for my future, you know, on a multi-year situation.
Now, your speed needs no introduction here. You're the reigning Formula 3 champion. You're leading Formula 2. But what do you think is your greatest strength? Such an awkward question, Tom. Honestly, well, you can't put him on the spot like that and say, get him to say, what do I, why am I so
okay.
great? What's so great
Well,
about it? It's too modest, like, he's not.
look,
Awful question.
it's a difficult question because I never think about this. I just try to do my best. But if something, I would like to say my progression is always very good in the series I've done. So every year in every single seater I've jumped in, I could see I improved so much my driving, my knowledge about cars and technical sides, you know. I was never a guy in the past that was so much into technical side of racing. More, I was just about how am I able to drive fast. And nowadays I'm learning much more about car setups and stuff like this in the past 2 years. So I think I'm very curious to learn new things. And the progression, you know, especially in F2 this year, it was very tough because we started very badly. Like we were P12 in the championship at some point, and from there on we just went up and up and up in the championship, and now we are leading. So I think the progression, the no-stop development, it's a great thing I have.
I feel like I'm missing out because it seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person, so you can successfully grow your business. Covering all of your sales channels, from a shopfront-ready POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Full of the industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth, Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn new skills in design or coding. And thanks to award-winning help and with an extensive business course library, Shopify is ready to support you every step of the way. What's lovely about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify will be there to empower you with the confidence and control to take your business to the next level. It's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is Possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/nation, all lowercase. Go to shopify.co.uk/nation to take your business to the next level today. shopify.co.uk/nation.
Gabriel, you touched on a question I have. It's kind of fashionable at the moment with younger drivers coming in and doing very well immediately. You know, Oli Bearman, and also, you know, you could say Liam Lawson as well, and Colapinto. You know, these guys you've raced with, and they are able to adapt very quickly. Obviously, that's good for you because I think that must be part of the reasoning behind Mattia Binotto's decision to have a driver straight up from F2. But it seems to me that everyone's very well prepared. In my day, they just threw us in and you sank or swam. But it seems like there's a lot of preparation before you get there.
Yeah, I think, and like I can talk for myself. Obviously, I do a lot of preparation in the simulator, especially when I'm home. I spend 7, 8 hours a day, doing simulator. And I mean, I don't have anything else to do. That's the truth. I just go gym and simulator. So that's what I can do. And I drive so many cars. I drive like drain dry in the ovals and every single thing. I don't know if this makes a difference or not, but at the end of the day, if you do this every single day of your life, maybe on track it makes a difference, So I think sometimes, when you see a racing start situation and you have done in a simulator hundreds of times at home, it's automatically, you don't even think about, but you just place your car where it should be. Because at the end of the day, in the simulator, you are also racing against drivers, maybe not real drivers, but they have the idea of how to do things. So it's something curious, but I'm realizing this as well recently, and I think the simulator helps me a lot in this area.
Gabriel, did you think about already the next two F2 races? Because that's almost a test for you. It's quite easy when we have the Formula One news, everyone approaches you in a different way. It's quite easy to lose the focus. Did you think about already? Because I tell you, it's a test already for next year. You're going to have so many reasons next year to lose focus. So did you think about it? How are you approaching those two next races?
Look, listen, I'm doing exactly the same things as I was doing before the announcement or before signing anything. I'm home, as I said, spending several hours a day doing my sim, going to the gym. Less than a week ago, I was at your place. We were talking about physical preparation, how to improve that and stuff like this. So I'm also going to focus more in this area. And I don't think anything changes in my life. It's just an announcement. Obviously, it's very nice to be an F1 driver, but nothing changes. I'm gonna keep doing the same things I did, and if it has been working so far, it's gonna be working in the future for me as well. So yeah, I'm gonna keep my focus. I was driving in Qatar for the last 2 hours with the F2 car, and I think that's the prep I need to do. And my focus is even more now because finally I can take all this pressure of are you gonna be a Formula One driver next year or not? So finally I can say yes, that's it. We don't need to talk about rumors anymore, and I can just focus on what I need to.
That's a very good point. Do you feel less pressure now?
100%. I mean, it's not that it's gonna make me a better driver, but I will just. Before the announcement, you just don't want to leak this somewhere. You don't want a media talking about this before the actual announcement goes on because it's very bad if this happens because the teams want obviously a big boom when the announcement is out and the most like people realizing the announcement in that moment that they didn't hear it before. So for me to be able to, when people ask me now and I'm going to be able to just say, yeah, I'm going to be in F1 next year. That's it. Boom. Conversation over. Instead of being like, oh, you see, maybe we need to sign, well, this and that. Now it's a clear answer. We can move on. Next question, and it's simple. So I'm able now to just be with more freedom and enjoy things.
Gabriel, there's a complication in all of this, and it involves a man called Fernando Alonso, who is your manager, but you're going to be racing him in Formula One next year. A, that must feel very surreal, but also tell us a little bit about the influence that Fernando's had on your career, and maybe can you share some of the advice that he's given you?
Yeah, I mean, we start working at the end of 22, mid end of 22, and he helped me a lot in the driving side at the beginning, of F3 because everything is new. It's a new format of race weekend. You have so many less practice, than other series. So you basically have a 30 minutes practice that no one does actually 30 minutes because everyone is waiting in the pit to go out with the better track position possible. So you do like 3, 4 laps in the practice and then you go to qualifying. And to have Fernando in that moment, I think was nice because I used to ask him so many questions about track conditions after he drove or things that he tested with the F1 that worked. Obviously, not everything works in F3 as well, but at the time there was many things he told me that helped me. So I think that was positive. And also, you know, how to deal with an F1 weekend, how to deal with the media in that moment, stuff like this. But it's not only him, you know. People always talk about Fernando, but there is a group of people in A14. There is Alberto and Albert that are the also two owners, and they were actually more even involved than Fernando because Fernando was racing. He needed to focus on that. But, you know, a lot of people is involved in my career so far, but has been nice. And also in this deal with McLaren and now with Sauber, Fernando has been putting a lot of inputs on that and helping to figure out the best way possible to go.
Do you think he's going to help you as much in the future, particularly when it comes to car setup and track conditions and that kind of thing?
I don't know, to be honest. Hopefully he doesn't change. I don't think he's going to change. He sees that I am, let's say, a good future for him, because I don't think he's going to be there for very, very long. He can have some more years in F1, but obviously we all know it's not forever. And he wants me to develop as much as I can and to improve and to have a long career there and to one day maybe win races and world championships. But obviously this is a long way there. You don't need to think about this right now, but I'm sure Fernando wants this for me and he's going to keep helping me. He's not going to just put me there and say, now figure out everything by yourself. Good luck. And that's it.
You mentioned the announcement and Luciano was talking about the pressure that Brazil sometimes put. Was it a conscious thing to not announce it at the Brazilian Grand Prix? Why did it happen just after?
I don't think it was anything related to media, you know. They wanted to do this in front of everyone in Sauber with Mattia there as well, because Mattia was not in Brazil. So I think they wanted to announce for the whole factory before, and then that I was able also to visit the factory in the day I was announced, to meet everyone, to go to every area, you know. I've seen the wind tunnel and things. So, you know, to meet everyone, I think was the perfect situation to be announced, you know, in front of everyone in the team. I think it's better than a race weekend, because I was there doing a lot of media stuff. So I think it was better, but nothing related to how much people were going to talk in the Brazilian Grand Prix.
I was very lucky when I joined Ferrari as a test driver to work with really, really good people. Yeah, since Jean Todt, Ross Brawn, Roy Byrne, Andrea Stella, that I told Tone already how good was he as an engineer. You also had the chance to work with him. And now you have Mattia, that was there in Ferrari when I was there. He was taking care more of the engines, but he's a really good and clever guy as well. What did he tell you? Did he have the chance already to give you some tips, some advices how to deal with the beginning of your career in F1?
Yeah, we spoke a bit. Mattia wants me to be very focused in F1 after Abu Dhabi. He wants me first to focus as much as I can in F2, so he's not going to, you know, put me in situations that can take out my focus. And then after that, he wants to create a very good atmosphere around me in the team, and, you know, to put people that he knows can help me to develop as a rookie in F1. So I think he has a very good leadership and a mentality to, you know, to give me the best conditions possible to step up in F1, feel comfortable, feel that I am in the right position, don't feel any extra pressure, there is no needed. So, yeah, obviously we're going to still talk much more in the next months and days or whatever, because we are still getting to know better each other, but has been very great so far to meet him and to have some chats and, you know, to prepare for things next year.
And any chats with your future teammate, Nico Hülkenberg?
I had a quick one yesterday. Looks like he just woke up when we called him. But he was super nice to me. We had a quick chat. Just he was saying congratulations to me. We were both, me and Mattia, in the phone with him. And, you know, we were looking ahead to work with each other. You know, we all know he's a fast and experienced driver. So I want to learn from him and, you know, see what we can do together. It will be very cool to have him as a teammate. And yeah, let's see how things goes. But I actually need to one day talk to him in person. I told him, if I am in Monaco sometime, you know, I'm going to knock on your door and we can have a coffee together.
I was going to ask just the one question, which was of the drivers, obviously Fernando Alonso has to be excluded from this, but of the drivers, who do you admire? What sort of style of driver do you admire in F1? Is there a particular driver that you look at and want to, and go, that's my style, that's the guy I would like to be like?
Right now or for many, many years?
No, right now. Yeah. Or you could get, or either. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe, you're fishing for a compliment, aren't you,
Damon? Oh, yeah. No, I was.
Maybe you know Damon Hill, you know, maybe.
Excluding me and Fernando Alonso.
Okay.
Who...
okay. Excluding you, I think like from nowadays, I really like how Max drives. In the sense of like, I really admire his quali laps and how much he extracts of the car, you know, in these laps. The way he drives and race, I think it's very nice. Obviously, it can be very hard. We have seen in the last races, but obviously they are fighting for a world championship, so we all expect them to race each other like that. But I think I've always admired a bit like how Max drive. Since I was very young, because I was part of a team in go-karts that he grew up with. So they always told me stories about him. And I was always like, okay, what would Max do in this situation? And I wanted always to be a bit like him, because he won every single thing he did in Junior Series. So yeah, I think him, and obviously my biggest hero is Ayrton Senna, but for the driver he was, for the everything he did on track, but also outside of the track, I think he was a great person with great morals, and you know, the legacy he left behind, and everything he did for Brazil, I think that's something I am inspired by.
That's a wonderful answer.
Very good.
Yeah, that's a great answer. But you didn't listen to me, Gabriel. Damon Hill was what you were meant to say.
No. We excluded me. Honestly.
Look, thank you so much. Are you going to now go back? You're now back on the sim.
Yeah, look.
Yeah.
That's my rig.
Okay. You need to get a dog or something to get you out of the house.
A dog? I wish, but how am I going to bring him to the racetrack? I don't want to bring him in the paddock.
No, you can't.
I'm already trying to convince him to cycle, so maybe I'll be able to do that.
Yeah, you need to do something outside.
Gabriel, Luciano was telling me that you were on the cycle machine with Luciano last week or something.
Yeah, I went to his home. He was showing me around the bikes and everything, convincing me to get a bike. And I'm looking forward to it, actually, because probably that's the only way to put me out of my house, you know, because if not, I spend the whole day here. I've already went to the supermarket today. I bought everything for a month.
Well done. Yeah. Deodorant, toothpaste, and you look a bit pasty. You need to get some sun.
Yeah, probably.
All right, great stuff. Gabriel, thank you so much, mate.
Thank you very much, guys. It was a pleasure to be here.
Well, guys, that was great to have him on. What a nice guy.
Yeah, he passed the nice guy test with flying colours. So great to see him, and look forward to seeing more of him when he comes into Formula One. I mean, he's still got a bit of F2 to do, but I've seen him come from the back of the grid in Monza to the front. That was a pretty impressive drive. So plenty of talent there.
And he's a really nice boy. I mean, like I said, I met him last year. We are not friends yet. We just know each other a little bit, but every single time that we talk to each other, he's a really nice guy, a really nice person. So, and very clever. You can see he's only 18 and he's quite mature already. So I really like the boy.
I'm quite fascinated by the whole relationship with Fernando Alonso and what Fernando's done for his career. I mean, both of you, if you'd had someone of Alonso's experience working with you in your careers, do you think it would have benefited you?
Amen.
I definitely think it would have helped if I'd had someone who was currently, you know, or very close to currently driving in F1 helping. And I've heard a lot of your Beyond the Grid interviews, Tom, and so many of the drivers from the early days have said exactly that. They said, if I'd only had someone experienced to give me advice, because it wasn't like that in those days. So why I asked him the question about preparation, you know, there's so much more nurturing and preparation for young drivers now, which is really useful, and it's brilliant. It saves a lot of agony and pain down the line, making daft mistakes from naivety, really.
Yeah, for me, well, There is a big story here, but if you want to know more, you have to go to the Beyond the Grid that Tom done with me last year. But I managed to get to Formula One by myself. I didn't have a manager, which is quite nice that I was able to do on my own. But for sure, I was then lacking someone to help me with more experience, more mature, especially when I was in Jaguar, and there was like a nightmare in terms of management. Then went to Prost. Prost was broken in terms of money. I needed someone, and unfortunately, I didn't have that. So it's easy to see now, but at the time, I wasn't able to react to it.
For every winner in Formula One, there's always a loser. And of course, Gabriel Bortoleto getting the drive in 2025 means that both Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guan Yu are going to be on the sidelines. I'd love both of your thoughts on why you think they've opted for Bortoleto over Bottas in particular, because it seemed to be an either-or situation between the two of them.
From what I've heard quite a few comments along the lines of Mattia has registered the way in which young drivers can jump in and be quite effective quite early on. And I think that so he's looked at the F2 performances, and obviously Gabriel is fantastic. And I think there's also an element of a new broom sweeps clean. You know, he's got to have a fresh look team, and, you know, the carryover sometimes is perhaps, you know, putting a young driver and an experienced driver together is a good combination. So why he signed Nico and not work at this German driver, I mean, it's, you know, it sort of fits, doesn't it? Audi, German driver, I can understand that. So anyway, possibly that's my take on it.
But Damon, the point about the F2 drivers, and there's no doubt that Colapinto and Behrmann and Lawson have done an amazing job so far this year, except in the rain in Brazil, not Lawson, but the other two were exposed by the conditions, weren't they? And I wonder whether there was just a little bit of Binotto that was thinking, oh, that's inexperienced showing there. Would a more experienced driver have had fewer problems in the wet weather?
I thought about that as well. And I totally agree that the more experienced drivers were able to deal with Interlagos situation in a better way. I agree with you. But you have to remember as well that they resurfaced the track with 60 days before the Grand Prix. And everybody knows that the first time that they got the cars, any kind of cars, are running around a wet track with a new tarmac on it, is going to be trouble in terms of a lack of grip. That is like, I don't know the name of the fluid.
The bitumen.
Yeah.
The bitumen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if
asphalt.
If you think about it, it was tough for everyone. That's why we didn't see so many overtaking apart from Max, because there was just one line that they could drive on it. They were not able to go outside, inside. We saw Sainz making a mistake that was Alonso making a mistake. So I agree with you. More experience helped, but the situation in terms of grip was really, really, really bad. So they were exposed. I think wouldn't be fair to just see these mistakes from the young drivers to judge them. It was really bad in terms of grip level.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Luciano. And so what's next for Valtteri Bottas? He mentioned at the weekend that he might go back to Mercedes as a third driver. And I think he's been made that offer. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that appeals when you've done more than 250 Grand Prix and won 10 of them? Or do you think Valtteri, he seems to have so many interests outside of Formula One now with his cycling, and he's an entrepreneur like you, Luciano. He's got all sorts of businesses that are nothing to do with racing now. I wonder whether he might just walk away.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's very difficult these days. I think with Formula One is so popular now, it's so massive. When a driver is in Formula One, they are big news, whatever they do or say. And then to move out of Formula One, there's such a huge drop off in attention. And we've seen Sebastian Vettel doing his promotion for green issues and the environment, but he needs F1, if you like, to make that happen. So it is very, very difficult. The outside world is very different. And who, if you're a racing driver and you've still got something to give, like Valtteri, then, he wants to be driving something. Yeah, I can see him going and doing, like Mark Webber with World Endurance or something like that, rather than just sit around. I mean, coming to a race and being as a spare part is no fun, really, if you've been on the on the grid.
Yeah, I agree with Damon that being in the paddock without having a proper thing to do, it's quite boring. So be there as just a reserve driver for Valtteri wouldn't be nice. But at the same time, I don't think I know him a little bit from the times when he was at Williams with Rubens, as he was the young driver as Rubens' teammate. He's a really nice guy. But I don't see him, for example, like a Rubens or Alonso or some others that just think about motor racing. I think he can think about something else, so that's my opinion.
I was speaking to Rubens at the weekend in Brazil, and he was saying that he thinks he could still get the job done in Formula One. That is how much. That is how much.
Rubens, come back. Come on.
I don't think John, I don't think he fits in the car. Maybe he can do it, but he doesn't fit anymore.
Look, if neither Bottas nor Joe drives another Grand Prix, what are their legacies? Let's start with Joe.
Joe's legacy is incredible. I mean, he literally has put China, or turned on the light, if you like, in China for Formula One. So he'll be, I think he'll be revered. It's almost like, not quite first man on the moon, but I mean, in China, he's the first ever Formula One driver. So he's left his marker there, and everyone else is just from there is going to be following him. So I can imagine him scouring the country, and they've got a lot of people to look for. But in there somewhere is another racing driver better than anybody he's ever seen.
That is exactly what he said in the press conference at the Chinese Grand Prix when asked about the future of Chinese drivers in Formula One. He said, "When I stop racing in Formula One, I want to start giving back and I want to find the next Chinese driver." So let's hope that happens quickly. But what about Valtteri Bottas then? 10 wins, 20 pole positions, 67 podiums. That's a decent knock, as they say.
Let's say, he was maybe unlucky to have on his side a guy called Lewis Hamilton. Valtteri for sure has the speed, has the talent, but I think Damon knows as well, or how difficult it is sometimes to have a teammate that is a tough guy.
Yeah, I do know what it's like to have a teammate who's a tough guy. You're right. I had a couple.
You had a few of
And
them.
then a couple of tough opponents as well. I mean, there is this next level. And I think drivers, if I might say, like myself and Valtteri, very good, you have to dig so deep to beat them. I mean, Nico Rosberg, he was almost in tears when he won the world championship because it's so much pain he had to put himself through to beat Lewis in the same equipment. It is hard. They are very tough nuts to crack. And so he did it. He did a very fine job, I think, Valtteri up against Lewis, and he put in some great performances as well on his own merit. But people can see after a bit, people can see that's the limit. That's where it stops. And then they've got to move on to the, they've got to keep going through the reservoir of drivers to find someone who can beat the Max Verstappens and the Lewis Hamiltons.
One of the saddest things for me about Valtteri is that I see no sign of him starting to tail off. I think 2024 has actually been one of his best seasons performance-wise. Okay, he's in the worst car on the grid and he's been propping up the back two rows of the grid in qualifying. But in terms of the performances he's put in relative to Joe, I think he's been relentless. And I think it would have been so easy for his mood to have dropped, his head to have dropped, and for it to have not mattered, I think. But I've been so impressed with how he's kept his motivation, and in a way, I think he's okay to feel hard done by, actually, because I feel
But he
he's done
won't
an
say
awful lot for that team.
Honestly, Tom, he won't say anything like that. He has kept his own counsel. He's never complained about anything. He hardly ever comes on the radio and goes, "Oh, that guy pushed me off." He's got a good philosophy, I think, about racing. You know, he races hard. He delivers most. And if you don't want him, he's not going to whinge that he hasn't got the credit he deserves or anything like that. He's taken up a bit of surfing. I could see him going off and being a big wave surfer. I could see Valtteri going to be doing Jules and Nazare.
He's what you might call your man now, Damon, isn't he? I can see that. So, of course, Gabriel Bortoleto joining Sauber means that there is now only one seat, on paper at least, up for grabs for 2025, and that is the second V-carb seat. Yuki Tsunoda already tied into that seat for next year. Liam Lawson doing everything that he needs to do to be retained by VCarb. But the big question mark still is what's happening alongside Max Verstappen at Red Bull Racing. Will Checo Perez, who has a contract, stay at the team next year? It feels like the team is being non-committal towards him. And so if they do move Perez on to pastures new next year, who goes alongside him? Is it Lawson? Is it Tsunoda? Or, as became apparent at the Sao Paulo Grand Prix, could Franco Colapinto play a role in all of this? So, question to you two. You know how we sometimes do driver of the day after a Grand Prix? I'd now like each of you to tell me who you would put alongside Max Verstappen at Red Bull Racing in 2025. Who is that driver? Damon.
Well, I would have put Carlos Sainz there, but that's not going to happen. So I think it's Liam Lawson, almost certainly, because they've got experience of him. I mean, this is where you get into the murky world of, well, there may be some big money. And if that's the case, then it could be Colapinto. But I think he's a little bit inexperienced. So you might see him at Racing Bulls.
I think Red Bull needs to think more about the psychological side. Who is the strong guy in the head to be next to Max in that team? It's not just about speed. It's mainly about self-confidence and a cool head to deal with the pressure. Lawson seems to be one of those guys. He seems to be very open for the fight and he doesn't seem to care too much. At least that's what he shows off. I would go for Lawson, but I do agree with Damon. And I don't know why Red Bull didn't want to give Sainz a chance. I think he would be the guy to be there.
I think the circumstances were different back then. I think when Sainz was trying to get a drive at Red Bull, they still had true faith that Checo was the right guy because he had a very strong start to the season. And I think that's one of the reasons they didn't have Sainz. I mean, there are other reasons as well, I'm sure. But I think if they were having the conversations now, the end result might be different. But I think when Sainz was looking for the drive, I think they still truly believed in Checo Perez. Anyway, if you want more analysis of the driver market and Bortoleto's move to Sauber, please take a look at F1.com or download the F1 app or follow at F1 on social media. Well, guys, thank you very much. It's been brilliant to see you both. And thanks for your contributions as ever. Luciano, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, I hope to see you guys.
Hey, Luciano, I say I'll see you soon, but actually, I probably won't see you until next year's Sao Paulo Grand Prix.
I was going to say exactly that, Tom. Nice to talk to you guys. It was a pleasure. But I think I will see you in Brazil next year. So it'll be a while.
And Damon, what's your next race? You're not in Vegas. What's your next race?
I'm going to be at Abu Dhabi with F1 as an ambassador, which means I talk to guests and shake hands. And it's very nice.
Well, let's hope it's a title decider. But Lando Norris has got to outscore Max Verstappen by some considerable margin at the two races prior to that. Guys, thanks so much. And I'll see you soon.
Cheers, Tom.
Thank you.
We've got one more weekend to catch our breath from that sensational Sunday in Sao Paulo before we go racing again. The season-ending triple header starts with the unmissable Saturday night street race across the iconic Las Vegas Strip. And you can still be there. You can book your seat at the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Just go to tickets.formula1.com. And thanks very much to Damon, to Luciano, and of course to Gabriel Bortoleto, Brazil's newest Formula One driver. Great to have you all on the show. And if that wasn't enough Brazilian F1 content for you, then 11-time Grand Prix winner Rubens Barrichello is my guest on F1 Beyond the Grid this week. That's available on your podcast app and the official F1 YouTube channel from Wednesday. And the latest F1 Explains podcast was recorded on the starting grid just before lights out. It's all about what happens in the minutes before the start of a race. Search for F1 Explains to find that. We will, of course, be back next Monday with our preview of the Las Vegas Grand Prix. But for now, thank you very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.